Hello and welcome to our latest edition of Charity Pulse. I'm joined today by Victor Meldrew. I'm so sorry. I mean, Charles Mosquita, Investment Director at Filter Cheviot. And we also have a skilled navigator joining us today, which is James Saunders from More Kingston Smith. And if you want that reference to navigation, it's all to do with the Chief Executive of the Charity Commission at the ICAEW conference. So look that up. Today we're looking at a really mixed bag of different topics that have come up in the sector. We are finishing on a high, just so that I think it's better for us all to get it out of our system and vent where needed. But we'll start gently with a story about a grant maker closing applications to their programme after almost half of all applicants failed to meet their criteria, which does seem quite a high failure rate. Apparently the staff were, quote, surprised by the low success rate. But I know Charles and James have experience of different grant-making charities and processes that could be used. So Charles, I'll come to you first, whether you had any particular reactions to that.
Yeah, so I didn't look at this particularly closely, but it appeared to be a part of the grants programme, wasn't it? So it was a small grants bit of it. I mean, I think there is a fundamental message here for all grant makers. I think we have become possibly a little bit over-reliant on getting too much information in before making decisions. I mean, I know with a trustee hat on at RL Glasgow, we've completely changed the way that we're doing it. But that was mainly because we'd moved from paper-based to online. And then we were finding that we were opening up our grants applications on a Monday morning and having to close it 2 minutes later because we were inundated with. But, you know, one of the measures we had was very much so about applications to success or failure. And I mean, we were up at 95, 96%. And to me as a trustee, I think we have a responsibility. Otherwise, you end up wasting other people's time. But now, in fact, we've gone completely changed the way we're doing it. So we've actually gone out and found our partners or selected, I think it's 49 of them, and said, here's a chunk of money, you go away and spend it. Here's the sort of criteria we're expecting it to be spent on, and then come back and tell us how you've spent it. But again, even when they come back and tell us how they spent it, I'd be really careful about how much information we require for them and do we really need it. So, I mean, I think the message from this for me, I mean, I don't know about, because this was Barrett Foundation, wasn't it? Barrett Holmes and a corporate, is that, you know, we're complaining about government and the way that they distribute grants and that they should be doing multi-year funding and everything else. We really as a sector should be setting the example and not putting in great barriers in place, because otherwise it just ends up wasting a hell of a lot of people's time.
Absolutely. James, any?
Yeah. I've seen some good examples of grant makers, you know, re-engineering their processes in recent years. And, you know, the key to me, I think, is to get that balance between the information that's available and required to be read by the applicants. You know, you can't put reams out there and expect everyone to read every page. They'll get frustrated after a couple of minutes and just submit or go away, regardless of what your guidance says. So you've got to have a balance between, you know, punchy, relevant guidance for the applicants and the safeguards against inappropriate applications progressing, really. You know, if something clearly isn't meeting the criteria, then it should be rejected. So the interesting thing for me actually about this particular article was that it said with the benefit of review, they said something along the lines of, we're going to re-engineer the process for ourselves and have a process that expects to have a high volume and low success rate, which to me, you know, that this is what we've always criticised about, particularly the government applications. You know, that's just wasting everyone's time. It's wasting the applicant's time. It's wasting your own time. High volume, low success rate. You want the exact opposite. You want the right applicants coming through, and wheedling out anything that isn't appropriate at an early stage, not giving them all the chance to get to a later stage and then wheedling them out. Just crazy. That doesn't seem a very strange conclusion to get to.
Yeah, Very much, yeah, I think we're making much harder work out of this than is needed. And it seemed as though there was an obvious solution that was being missed, really, rather than disappointing a whole load of people and wasting time.
Yeah, they seem to have a bad system, and they're just about to make it much worse.
So in other news, we now have some charity investment governance principles that have been published, I think it was this week. It's been a year-long project. It's been a group of charity leaders that have come together and discussed what these principles should be, and they have been now made public. We've had the Charity Finance Group involved, NCVO, Wales Council for Voluntary Action. The Charity Commission has been an observer to the project. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to the Charity Commission being an observer on this, because I wasn't sure I was in complete agreement with what has been published, or even whether we actually need these charity investment governance principles. But I'm going to come to Charles first, and then James might calm us down again. But let's see, Charles, what you think.
I have to say I slightly lost the will to live of reading through these principles, and I attended a session trying to explain what the purpose of them was for. I mean, they've aligned them to the Charity Governance Code, which I'm not quite sure why they've done that. The principles apply to charities in England and Wales, but they hope that it'll be a useful resource for those in Scotland and Northern Ireland. And the other thing, I think, which I sort of cynically think was the main driver behind this, is that they wanted to apply, so for these to apply to the Butler Schloss case, of which, Catherine, I'll leave you to comment on that particular element of it and how momentous that was and what a big change to charity law that didn't make, despite actually somebody saying it was, it did. And how their investments might conflict with the charity's purposes. I mean, I have to say that, and I didn't ask this question, but having seen the question online, there was one person who put up what problem was the Charity Investment Governance Principle Code trying to solve? And I can't say that I could answer that question. And having read through them, I don't think they add any value. And I suspect this is just going to gather dust on a shelf and will be forgotten about. Probably, thankfully, you know, I just couldn't see what this does that is it improves or adds to the Charity Commission guidance, investing money guidance for trustees, the CC 14, which I have to say, I mean, I'll applaud the Charity Commission because I think they have done a fantastic job with the rewrite of the CC 14. I think they have put it in really plain language. And my advice to any trustee, staff, or anybody else is forget the charity investment governance principles, whether it's for large, small, or just for cash, and just read CC 14 because I think you're going to have much greater benefit out of it. But yes, that was definitely my victim, Meldrew. I'm not just sitting there flabbergasting about what a waste of time they've been. I won't sit on the fence with this one, I'm afraid.
James, had you had a chance to dive into
I mean,
the
it seems to me it'll be, you know, the results we'll only know in due course when either there is, you know, the danger is, of course, it conflicts with CC 14 in some way, that it hasn't been foreseen yet. And in the end, charities and trustees find themselves in some way bound by CC 14, whereas maybe the new principles say something different, you know, give the opportunity for something different. Again, this is unknown unknowns, isn't it? To quote a long-gone American politician, but that will, I think, that'll be it'll be whether the principles really help at all and actually prove to be a help, whether people will come back in a year's time and go, right, those principles really helped us with our planning or our review. Like Charles, I think it's possibly unlikely, and equally whether it proposes any problems at all. So we'll only know in due course. It seems a bit of overkill, I have to say.
I have to say, if anybody does find them helpful, I genuinely would be fascinated to know how and why. Because if I am missing it, I'll apologize straight up. But you know, I mean, I know they're not designed for people like me who've been living and breathing this subject all my life. But I have to say, I just think there are better things that we could and should be doing, and this ain't one of them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to get some feedback on that, won't it? Let's see what people think. My next story, I think, would be one where I was just a bit surprised about this. It happened today, in that the Charity Commission has issued a letter to the General Synod of the Church of England, which I thought was just quite a big move in and of itself. And this has come from the Makin review about safeguarding in the Church of England. And there is a meeting of the General Synod next month. But particularly forceful, I thought, was the Charity Commission saying that they have made clear that the time for review has passed and now is the time for action. And the Commission has also made clear their regulatory expectations that the necessary changes must be implemented as soon as possible, with the church using its legal powers if needed to expedite the action required. So I just thought it is getting in front of, what is a very prominent story. We've heard a lot about the Makin review and what the church is or isn't doing about it. But I thought for the Charity Commission to get themselves right into the middle of that story was quite interesting. Where I thought the commission possibly shouldn't have got themselves right in the middle of a very poorly written story, in my opinion, is the story this week about charity chief executive pay in the sector generally, whether that is too much. I think it was an article originally in the Telegraph, but I have seen a number of comments on this topic generally from different charity chief executives. And I think in general, it was the tone of the comments from the Charity Commission, whether that was supportive, whether that was appropriate for their role, and whether they were informed comments article or not. So, James, in particular, I think probably more so on the not quite the statistics, but the financial reckoning behind, how are these figures even calculated and considered, and what was behind the story in the first place?
I was pretty disappointed, really, with particularly the Telegraph article, which I thought was one of the most disingenuous pieces of reporting I've seen recently. It was not balanced in the slightest. I'm not going to call it journalism. It wasn't journalism because it wasn't balanced and considered. It basically said more chief executives in charities are being paid over the bandings, higher bandings than it was 5 years ago or something like that. Now, there was no consideration of inflation, wage inflation. There's no consideration of sector growth. There's 170,000 charities now, whereas 165,000 5 years ago. There's more numbers. That it's such a crude analysis of the numbers. Just more people are being paid at a higher level. Well, of course they are. That's the case in everywhere. And trying to put it across as, or was leaving it as open as, this is a criticism of the store of the sector. And really interestingly, there was one single line at the end of the article which said, "Defenders of the sector have pointed to how much good the sector does." That was the only nod to balance in the article. It was crazy. I just thought it was dog whistle reporting. It really was completely unbalanced, completely, poorly represented, really bad. And you only have to look at the comments section below the article online to see the sort of reactions that it was trying to generate in the first place. So really, very ill-informed, pretty ignorant, really.
Yeah, and I find it interesting because it almost seemed to be open your mouth to change feet, that a lot of people objected to comments saying it related to large and complex charities that needed to be able to attract the best people. And the comment was, what about small and medium charities doing absolutely crucial work? Don't they need to attract the best people as well? And, Charles, I don't know whether you had picked up on any of the discussions around this article.
And what I find amazing is that there are two questions the commission is always going to get asked. One is about too many charities, and the other one is about salary and pay, particularly around chief executives. I mean, it was a shocking article. I mean, they were talking about 44 employees earning over 400,000, of which 20 of them come from the Wellcome Foundation. But when you actually look at the organisations they're talking about, you've got people like Nuffield Health, church commissioners, and the Charities Aid Foundations. I mean, these are big big businesses, a lot of them. And the Wellcome Foundation is an investment management company. So if you want to recruit the best, unfortunately, you've got to pay for it, whether you approve of it or not. But what I find really frustrating is that nobody ever comes out with the facts. You know, I just did a quick Google search. So the average pay, do you know what the average pay of a FTSE 100 chief executive is?
$1.5 million
No, 4.2 million.
Wow.
And that's 113 times the median full-time worker, which is just over 37,000. Okay, yeah. Average salary of a UK CEO is, the package is about 168,000, salary is 85,000. The average of a top 100 charity is about 175,000. I think that's the package. So sort of in line. If you look at the average salary of a charity CEO, they range from 60K to 120K. You know, it's completely different. So there's no perspective in this article whatsoever. But also, I mean, I'm sorry. I think David Holdsworth is a really good chap from the things. But these are the sorts of facts and figures I'm afraid to say he needs to have at his fingertips and the information he needs to give to the journalist. I mean, a permanent secretary, their average salaries are 150K to 200K. I was actually quite surprised. I was expecting that to be higher. But then, of course, you've got to take into consideration most of them have got final salary schemes. Pension schemes, I mean, which are absolutely bulletproof, of which these chief executives don't. And fundamentally, you know, if we want a dynamic, successful charity sector doing amazing work, you know, we've got to pay people fairly for the job that they do. Otherwise, we're just not going to recruit decent people. So, I mean, I just find it extraordinary that this whole thing about chief executive salary has been going on for as long as I can remember, and people pointing to, you know, particular cases saying, oh, isn't that terrible? Mainly because they think nobody in the charity sector should be paid anything because they should all do it for love, and the fact that they can live on air doesn't matter. So, you know, I have to say it just beggars belief in my respect. I thought it was a very poor response by the chief executive, David Holdsworth. And I just please, guys, let's get the message out there that actually average CEOs are actually paid a reasonable amount and do a fantastic job, most of them.
Hear, hear. Now I'm going to leave that there, Charles. Now you've got it out. I'd like you to lower your blood pressure. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this latest episode of Charity Pulse. We'd love to hear from you, you know, feedback on the charity investment governance principles, thoughts on charity CEO pay. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. And you can follow us on various podcast platforms and on our websites. And we look forward to seeing you on the next session.